Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening.
And this week, Fee and I are in conversation with Sienna Guillory. Sienna, you're one of the UK's most successful working actresses, actors. I don't really know anymore what's PC, but I noticed this lovely comment you posted recently on Instagram that described your feelings around so-called celebrity culture. You said you wanted to be one of those actresses that people know but can't quite place how or why they know you. You've also said that you knew from a very early age that you wanted to avoid fame. And this reminded me of an interview that Emma Thompson gave where she said, I find the concept of success flat and uninteresting. Our society places too much emphasis on it and not enough on the importance of failure and disappointment. I wish I'd known that success is a byproduct rather than something to be strived for. The process is the most important thing. Small success is best, then you can build on it slowly.
That's really good. I like that.
Yeah, that's it's beautiful, good. Isn't it? Would you be able to talk to us a little bit more about your experience of fame and fawning and recognition and why it is that you think you've avoided the trap of courting fame?
My initial foray into the world of sort of performance was, I felt very exposed. I was 16, going on 17, and I did Dilly Cooper's Riders. I was still at school. And because of the nature of the whole Dilly Cooper thing, I was splashed all over tabloids and I felt massively misquoted and I felt like everybody thought they knew me, but it wasn't me that was being represented and I found it really hurtful. I think now that we can accord interviews, I don't think everyone gets misquoted quite so much. I think it's impossible to be, which is really reassuring. But at the time, I just felt plundered and exploited and misunderstood. You feel like you're being robbed and misinterpreted. And I think the closest thing I experienced that felt like that fairly recently was when I was pregnant with my twins and just walking around a supermarket. People just feel like they can come up to you and touch you. They're like, oh, wow, you're having a baby. Let me tell you what you must and mustn't do. And you're kind of like a slow-moving buffet where everybody feels like they're entitled to give you their opinion on your business. And it's very intrusive and it's quite difficult to process why people feel it that it's necessary to come up and talk to you like you know them when you don't know who they are. And it's really alarming and terrifying. And it makes you feel like you have amnesia sometimes. It's like, do I know you? It's quite scary. And I feel like just going back to what Emma Thompson says about the importance of failure, I feel that when you're in a creative world, failure is so important because that's where you learn things. Yeah. Where you do things slightly wrong, where you watch work back and you go, ooh, you go, all right, I won't do that again.
I read on your IMDb page that Helen Mirren is a friend of the family and it seems that she's trodden a good path in terms of staying really grounded. What advice has she given you, if any, that's really stuck either personally or professionally?
Helen's an extraordinary human and I remember sitting around big round tables at agency meetings in 2001 and they were like, which actors do you admire, like whose career do you want to emulate, and I was like, Helen Mirren, and they were like, sorry, someone famous, would you like one we know of, and I was like, do you not know who she is? the thing I love about her is that, you know, she didn't come to the forefront, she wasn't ever a has-been, she became known when she was in her prime, when she was an adult. Prime suspect was really when she hit the wider consciousness. And it was very beautiful, I thought, that she was allowed to be an adult in a world that sort of infantilizes women and where power is very much youth and beauty. And I just always admired that power. And it made me want to be the actor that people didn't know until I knew what I was doing, you know?
Mm.
I admire that so much, rather than striving for fame. There's a lot of people striving to be famous without really understanding what that involves. And I think you described that so beautifully and vulnerably about your early experience of that.
Well, it's a transaction where you give away all your power. Everybody knows you, and that's their power. So you don't have any power in that transaction. You don't have any agency.
As this is a podcast about aging well, I wonder if we could talk about brain health, because as an actor, learning lines is a mainstay of your profession. I know we've spoken about this before as well. How intimidating, I mean, I can only imagine how hard this is, and how much of a challenge do you find it? And especially with midlife, the impact that menopause, perimenopause has on that, and how much we know that that impacts our brain and our ability to retain.
I mean, it's terrifying, the idea that you might not be able to remember your lines on set. That's really all you have to do. But I think also that most people come into realizing that they love acting when they are in their teens. And I think it's because our brain does not produce dopamine to the extent that we need in our teens. So we reproduce that by producing adrenaline. And by being on stage and being utterly terrified, it gives you the same boost and rush that we experience jumping into cold water. But that adrenaline rush produces dopamine and gives you a huge hit. And being terrified that you're going to forget your lines produces adrenaline and makes you work hard. And when it's beautifully written, it just works and everything works. Mm. When things are not quite so well written, it's a struggle, but you find a way, you know, you make it happen. I'm always really proud of myself when I remember my lines. It's something to go home and go, I did it! Say they're gone and you're like, oh.
Therefore, when it counts. I'm sure you must get asked this question all the time, but since we're recording this episode not long after Christmas, and one of the UK's most loved Christmassy films is Love Actually, how did you get the part of Jamie's girlfriend, and what are your memories of that film, and what was Richard Curtis like to work with?
What a thing to be a part of. I remember the agent called and said, oh, Richard Curtis is going to call you. He wants to ask you to do this. It was an add-on scene. They'd already filmed the film. I'd just come back from doing some other film, and I got this phone call from Richard, and he said, look, I've written this scene that I want to add, and I really want you to play this role. And he described the scene, and I was like, that sounds brilliant. It was just a beautiful day, and it was very kind of freewheeling, and Richard's a lovely man, and Colin was great, and very kissy, and I was like, I do actually have a cold. He was like, oh, no, not at all, it's fine. It was really good fun. I've never actually seen the film.
Oh, wow.
No.
Is that normal for you? Do you normally watch the films that you've been in?
Well, because I always felt like Love Actually, I would see it at some point. I didn't carve out the time to see it because I felt at some point I'm just going to be on a plane and it will be the only thing on because it's that kind of film. And then I'll see it. And then it became this kind of almost a battle with myself. It's like, how long can I go without watching this wonderful film? I read the script and I thought it was brilliant. And I loved all the roles. I loved all the stories. And I know that at some point I'll see it. It's just, I don't know.
It's good. You're good.
Those.
You've also had a tremendously successful modelling career. And I know you were signed to Select Models back in the 90s and had several huge fashion campaigns. Armani, Dolce & Gabbana, Burberry, Paul Smith, the list goes on. And of course, you were also the face of Hugo Boss fragrances.
I was. That was nice.
Amazing. What was your experience of the modelling industry and the 90s in general?
I mean, it was kind of extraordinary, the 90s. There were supermodels, but they had sort of superpowers. And I remember being at school and my entire wall was lined with photographs. And I was always really interested in the world of storytelling through imagery. I always felt like there was some kind of power that women had over men here in this sphere, because women were higher paid than men as models. And for me, there was something about the way that when you see a picture or a portrait or a painting of a woman, it's like she's in the middle of doing something and I need to know what she's doing. Whereas when you see a portrait of a man, it's like this character. You get a sense of who this person is. And the power of women in imagery, I've always been really interested in it. And I loved working in the 90s as a model because it was so creative. These teams of people like Pat McGrath and who worked with Mazelle, it was the whole team. It was everybody working together to create this story and this energy. And it was a really interesting place to be, and the money was great.
I second that about the 90s. I miss them. Looking at your career from the other end and I think a more recent development, can you tell us about the Carrier Company?
So the Carrier Company, my mum started 30 years ago as a gardener, and she started creating kind of garden stuff and bags that she could make at home when my little brother was asleep in bed and I was at school. And then she would teach local women how to make things because she believed that women should be able to make an income whilst they're looking after family members and have that. It gives you independence. Money gives you freedom, gives you independence. It's really important as a woman to have your own money. And that's something that she taught me that I've taken and run with, and it's helped me. And when I was modeling, I noticed that everybody that was hiring me was wearing workwear. They were all wearing like Japanese workwear styles, the stuff that my mom gardened in. So I started stealing my mom's gardening clothes and wearing them to auditions. And I'm 5'6". I'm not a model. And I have hips. I have like 38-inch hips, which is huge for a model. They're great. I love them. And I would wear this workwear to auditions. And I would get the job because they thought I was cool because I was dressed like them. And I was like, hang on. Even though I'm wearing these incredible sort of Chanel clothes on a runway, everybody that's styling us is always wearing the same stuff. They're all wearing workwear, stuff that feels good, beautiful cottons and linens and natural fabrics. That's what everybody that works in fashion, that love clothes, that's what they wear. So I was like, well, this is what I want to do. And also as an actor, I would try on 59 pairs of trousers for one scene because the producers would want my ass to look smaller because it was a big deal then. And it would be all about like, well, if we just move the seam here and if we take the seam away completely and if we just drop this pocket there. And I was like, wow, this is magic. I don't have to be thin. I can just wear better clothes. So then I got costume designers to redesign workwear so that it looks good on women's bodies because that's what I wanted to wear. And I think other people get it and like it. And so that's what I do in all my spare time. So that's Carrier Company.
Amazing.
Thank you.
So since this podcast is all about aging well, both inside and outside, and as a skincare clinician, I'd love to know what your routine is. So any specific products or brands that you love, whether it's skin, hair or nails, and what's in the bathroom cabinet, basically?
Okay, so basically, I've got Sophie on speed dial because she does the research. Sophie Shutter, you are extraordinary. You know what's in everything and you know how everything works. And for people like me that kind of, I know that peptides are good. I know hyaluronic acid is good. I know that niacinamide is a good thing because it's going to shrink your pores. I know that retinols are important at nighttime, but I've got really sensitive skin that just goes crazy and goes red. And so I'll use peptides and hyaluronic acid. I love Duogen as a company that does really nice pure hyaluronic acid. Trini London does a nice little peptide and hyaluronic acid combined thing that you can stick under any kind of moisturizer. What I really love is this thing that Sophie told me about. It's a gentle retinol. It's called Alpharet.
Yeah.
And you put it on at night and it just works. It's a lovely thing. And also there's a thing called Synchro Rose Fast for when I get really bad rosacea that, again, I got through Sophie. And in the winter, I really like, on top of that, if I get really dry, I put emu oil on, which is great for your knees and for your bones and for any dry patches of skin. So it's probably going to be like, what are you using that for? It works. It's great stuff. And I like, Bare Minerals is a company that make something called Complexion Rescue, which is like a little tinted moisturizer that looks like skin. And it's nice. It's an SPF 30, so I can only wear that when I'm not outside much. And then if I do go outside a lot, there's a company called Clinicare that do a really nice SPF 50 kind of premium dermocorrective cream, which covers redness again and is just really clean and nice. So, but yeah, cold water. I wash my face with cold water and I give it a massage twice a day. I pull the hair out of my ears.
Yeah, pretty low maintenance. What about supplements? Do you take any vitamins or nutritional support, any probiotics, stuff like that? We'd love your list.
I make kefir at home, Mum.
Love it.
They call it Mum's mouldy milk. They hate it. I think vitamin C is really important. I take a bit of, what's it called? Because I can't remember.
Ashwagandha.
I take that, but I only take it for like 3 months at a time in the winter. Take all kinds of things. I'm just like dabbling in this and that. I really like homeopathy, but in terms of general maintenance, a good multivitamin is good. I like collagen supplements. I think they're good as long as they're marine-based.
That's a pretty good spread.
I think the most important thing for me is just trying to... It's so easy to beat yourself up and be like, I should be exercising more and I should be eating better and I should not have had a glass of wine tonight. And actually, life is really short. And at the moment, I've got huge amounts of friends in Los Angeles. And when you look at the devastation of the fires and you look at the fact that we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, I think that being kind to yourself and being gentle on yourself is really valuable. For me, it's identifying those things that take me out of that worry. I think that's why I like the cold water swimming, jumping from the sea. You feel like you're in the sky. And again, it's that bang of adrenaline and the feeling afterwards, but also just...
The connection to nature and...
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you feel about so-called biohacking? And bearing in mind, cold water plunging and swimming is biohacking of some shape or form. Do you use any gadgets, any devices or wearables or any apps? So anything that works for you. And I mean, we did an episode on cold water and particularly the benefits of swimming specifically, which is one of the best hacks out there, along with having a dog.
So good. I feel it's very interesting when people have hard and fast opinions about, oh, look, they then get judgy about aging or not aging and allowing yourself to age or not allowing yourself to age. I think this is a ridiculous opinion to be like, you must allow yourself to age. Of course, we allow ourselves to age. And at the same time, every day, if you're caring towards yourself, you're eating things because they give you energy and because they make you feel good. You're getting up and you're doing Pilates because it makes you feel strong. And why would we not want to be our strongest and be our best? And why would we not want our skin to be resilient? And why would we not want ourselves to be the best that we can be? I think that that's allowing ourselves to be, is going, I'm going to drink this herbal tea because it will calm me. Or I'm gonna call this friend because they we'll connect and we can laugh about things that I'm finding overwhelming right now. And I think it's just all about self-care. And why would you not want to... My biohack, Sophie, like, what do I need to do to look after myself, to keep myself feeling good?
Yeah.
I think touch is really important. I would love to have a massage every day. That would be amazing.
That would be the best form of therapy, I think.
I think so. We talk about sort of touching grass and touching trees, but it is extraordinary, like the power of... I've been wowed a couple of times, you know, when you just have a headache and you feel a bit overwhelmed. Women, I think women my age, you know, I'm 15 this year, good Lord. You've got parents who you're looking after, you've got children you're looking after, you're in the middle of two full-time careers, you've got a house that's a bit too big, but I love it, and you're just busy, 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 but sometimes when I feel really stuck and heavy, I literally touch a tree and it sounds stupid, or I'll lie on the grass and it works. It's weird. I don't know how. It's like plugging yourself in and recharging. It's like it grounds you and pulls all of the ache and the fizz and the headache away, or whatever it is that hurts. And you get up and you feel refreshed. And I'm really grateful for that.
Back to acting, and I also wonder how you deal with critics and reviews and how this dovetails into the wider mental health conversation, because again, this can be especially tricky as a time for women in their 40s. Are you able to stay on top of your inner critic, and what do you find works for you and maybe also what doesn't?
I feel I've learned to accept and love my inner critic, because I am so critical of myself and my work, but I also appreciate that's what gives me the desire and the boost to enjoy what I'm doing. I love when things are difficult and figuring out how to make that work, how to make it interesting. I love when I solve an issue. You know, when things are very well written, it's easy, you turn up and the work does the work for you. You have to do very little, and you're working with great actors. You have to do very little. You don't have to really find a solution. when things are difficult, when things aren't so well written, you work twice as, you know, you work to the power of 10, trying to find a way to make it relevant and real and yet interesting. And I think every time you hit a brick wall, you find a way around it. And for me, the more I work, the more interesting I find it and juicy I find it when things are difficult and tricky and not quite working. And when you solve it and it becomes beautiful, or when I can do that, I work with young actors a lot. I play mothers a lot. And I love helping them to find the truth in what they're doing. Even if sometimes I literally have to be like, okay, sometimes I just think the camera can see into my soul. And you watch a switch in them and they go, oh God, stop pretending. Just be, feel it, get deeper, get into it, get uncomfortable, get raw, get naked with the camera in a way that you open yourself and you can't lie and get to the reality of this situation. Mm. And suddenly all of the hand flapping goes away and all of the weirdness or any kind of, I like finding ways to get comfy in uncomfortable situations.
And find the truth. In the yes. words, as you say, yeah, yes. beautiful, really yes. nice.
Truth is such a beautiful thing. When we have massive problems and you just go, what am I going to do about this? Sometimes you just, the best thing and the most beautiful thing is you just go, you can't control the situation. This is why it's stressful. If you can't control the situation, let it go. Let it roll. Mm. Watch it uncurl.
I love getting older when we can get to the point that we can remember that for ourselves. It seems, Sienna, as though travel continues to be a huge part of your life. Can you recommend any hotels, rentals, resorts? They don't have to be flash or fussy, but if they are, brilliant too. Anything that's truly special to you that you've discovered on your travels, whether in the UK or abroad?
As an actor, you travel all the time for work. And then the minute you're not working, you just want to be with family. We go to Italy a lot as a family, which I love. I discovered an area of Italy called Cilento, which is this huge, like, natural park that's near Naples, and it's extraordinary. It's, like, completely just nobody and nothing, and the sea is so blue. That was extraordinary. I really want to go to the Caribbean.
But yeah?
And I tried Googling it, and it's just like, ugh.
I think there's so much variety between different places in the Caribbean. So yeah, I've done a couple of islands. I wouldn't say I'm a Caribbean expert, but there are definitely places I still want to go out there.
I've been there a lot as a model. I've done like Mystique and Canoan and Antigua, Barbados, Jamaica. But I don't really like hotels because I feel like I'm at work.
Mm.
Airbnb is more my speed. I like going to the markets, seeing what there is to make and trying to make food.
How easily do you create a work-life balance and where's your happy place?
That's a good one. My happy place just is, because there's always something happening. And the more I think about must do this will happen, must want that to happen, it can be stressful. And again, my mornings, I do the lists and I do the ticking, the things off I can tick, and I do the scheduling. And then the afternoons are more creative. I'll be looking at colours or fabrics or learning lines or reading, researching.
What about, if we look back on your body of work, what has been a career highlight so far? Because you're not done yet. And are there any current TV or film projects or any projects that you can talk about that you'd like to talk about?
Favourite film I ever did. I learned so much on, and it was only half an hour long. It's with Spike Jonze directing, and Andrew Garfield and I played these robots. It's the most beautiful story. It's called I'm Here. I think you can watch it on YouTube. It's so beautiful, but it's weird. We had these robot heads on, and you're told to fixate on how you look as a sort of model and all of that, and a young actor. It's like, you know, well, you're this, and you're this, and you're like, okay, that must be important. And this whole film, and we had like robot heads on, and then we would take them off, the front off, and do the acting so we could see each other and respond to each other. And it was really interesting for me going, it's not about what I look like. It's about how I interpret feelings through movement and voice. You know, that's the thing. That's beautiful. That's nice. And what a story. It was a lovely story. But what's happening? I just worked with some beautiful people. Sophia Barclay, she's amazing. And Leo Souter are doing Inspector Linley, that's coming up on BBC. That was really good fun. Playing someone from Norfolk that I loved.
Perfect. Perfect. We'll link into those too.
And besides family and friends, can you tell us about a woman who you admire?
So many. I know, about, you know, you're sort of thinking, oh, no, them, no, they're a friend. No, them, no, they're a friend. Like, I tend to reach out to people I admire. And make
I love that.
Well, I do. I go, I love that you said this, or I love that you did that, because I feel very moved when people move me. And I think most people are quite responsive about their work when it affects people. I've certainly made a lot of friends through work. Maria Popova, I think. I don't know how my life would be without her. She has a beautiful website called The Marginalium, and every essay is so thought-provoking and so beautiful. Just, she writes so beautifully.
Is it a bit like, do you recall The Vampire's Wife? Oh gosh, Nick Cave's wife, Susie. She does a beautiful, similar thing. Or is it something like that?
This is like long-form essay, and there's no adverts, and she writes about the most extraordinary books that she's read. And she writes about the most extraordinary artists. But these are sort of long-form essays which are thought-provoking and interesting and educational and extraordinary. She just writes beautiful long-form reads, which we're so not used to anymore. I think we live in these kind of a sentence here and a soundbite there, and sometimes the long form is so much more nourishing.
Do you sleep well? What's your nighttime routine? And if you do watch TV at night, what are you watching?
Well, basically, I try not to drink more than a glass of wine. Sometimes you do when there's just too much going on. And sometimes I just have tea and I'm really happy with that. Or I do this, like, we do ginger juice. My daughter, Valentina, and I make, like, we juice ginger and turmeric and lemon juice and cider vinegar, and we freeze it into ice cubes, and then we just add hot water and... And I have an electric blanket, which is, I think, my favourite thing on earth. I turn my electric blanket on, I go into bed with a book. I'm reading about Boudicca or Boadicea at the moment. I find reading much more interesting and relaxing than watching things. I find watching things quite troubling sometimes, just in terms of you're looking at the work aspect of it. But then again, I love a film rather than a series. I watched something called A Prophet the other night, which is an extraordinary film. And sometimes, you know, I sort of watch that and you go, why was I like inhaling the junk food of that series? Which is just like, what happens next? And actually, I could be watching this like extraordinary film, which is shattering and gives me an entire insight into prisoners and prison life and a mindset of people that I have nothing in common with and have never met that just floors you. But yeah, I love a documentary. I love a music documentary to relax.
And I read a quote from you where you were talking about your early career and you said, I was so scared of going to university and being with people my own age, having been with a tiny little sect of girls in Norfolk whose daddies were farmers and politicians who didn't trust me and didn't know where I was coming from. Women's friendships are, I think, notoriously hard to navigate. And now you have teenage twin daughters. I can't believe they're teenagers. do you feel as though you've now found your tribe? And have you been able to give your girls any advice when it comes to friends and friendships? And I'm also keen to know what your boarding school experience was like.
It's weird. Boarding school is weird. School is weird. The only thing that I can compare it to is prison. There's no, in as much as, you know, you have to survive, you have to fit into a clique. And if you're not a clique person, who is anyone actually a clique person? I don't know. But if you can't fit into a clique, then you have to fend for yourself, which is impossible when you've got group mentalities and it becomes quite competitive. And you can be very isolated, even though you don't. It's like, you know, when a car cuts you up and you feel affronted and you're like, why would you do that to me? And you take it really personally. And it's like, you can't even see in my car. You don't even know I'm here. You don't even know you've really upset me. You're like, get over it. But when it's kids, it's really intense. And I've got twin daughters and they are very different to each other. One of them thrives socially and cares deeply about, as we all do, you know. And I said to them that the shittest thing about being a teenager, the worst thing about being a teenager is that you will not be able to stop worrying about what other people think about you. And you can put that as a filter across every self-doubt you have. Go, you're only thinking this because you're worried about what other people think of you. If you can just remind yourself, you're just worrying too much about what other people think of you and everybody else is going through the same thing, then it might help. It might help. I try and encourage them to have friends outside school. I found friends outside school and that made me feel like a human. I found people whose parents were crazy and they were coping with that whole situation. It was like, oh, we have so much in common. Or friends who had siblings with mental health disorders and we had so much in common. And I think it's a weird thing. I don't know if you have the same thing. You meet someone and you have this instant, I like you. I like you. I know you. I like you. I know that I like you. And it's just a sort of a feeling and it's just an instinct. And I think you just jump at those people. If they feel the same way, they jump back at you. And it doesn't matter how long you've known them. You get a sense of authenticity and you can... Yeah. I have that with you, Sophie.
Yeah, and vice versa. I just, you know, we don't see each other often, but when we do, it's, yeah, it's like we've never been apart and it's lovely friendship and support and conversation and... Yeah. Thank you so much, Sienna, for sharing so much so beautifully and for your friendship. I'm very lucky to have you.
Have you. And thank you for all that you do for women.
Oh, thank you, Sienna. Oh, for any of you who don't already follow Sienna on Instagram, she has some beautiful and life-affirming content on there. So you can find her and lots of cold water swimming, which I love seeing. So you can find her over at Guillory Guillory B, and we'll put that in the show notes.
Sophie, so lovely to talk to you. And thank you, Fiona.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.